Is this on? Yes, it is. Hello, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to Friday. How you doing? Man, I spent the day dodging Republican lies. It's difficult. They're all over the place. Everywhere you turn, Republican lies. Do you know, where did I read this today? If Obama proposed legislation to appropriate money to be used to send a nuclear device to outer space to shatter a meteorite on a course that would put it dead center of the globe and destroy all life on Earth, you know the Republicans would refuse to fund it. they would filibuster the bill. Oh my God, these people. How much does the stock market lose today? No, never mind. This hour is sponsored by Bruce Roby, and he's wishing happy 95th birthday to Helen Posey of Eugene, Oregon. And he writes, in my 95 years of experience, all problems in the world are from one source, religion. Go to the Freedom From Religion Foundation website now. That's FFRF.org. FFRF.org. You have to say it that way so it comes through on the radio. Elf. Like it was spelled E-L-F. Elf. Not quite E-L-F. Kind of like U-H-L-F. Elf. F-F. RF.org. Happy birthday, Helen Posey of Eugene, Oregon, 95 years old. All right. The protests against the Alberta tar sands pipeline began today. Did you happen to see anything anywhere or hear anything anywhere about it? Anything at all? Hello? The only place I got word about it was from the Guardian of the UK. Yeah. It was to begin, I think it begins tomorrow. Is it tomorrow morning? Tomorrow morning. The 11 a.m. The first group of 100 activists will gather at the gates of the White House. An area that is supposed to be kept clear and wait to be arrested. The only thing I would say to the activists is try to flex your wrists when they put those plastic cuffs on, because if you don't, they tighten them up real tight and they hurt like hell. I mean, not like a broken leg, but it does hurt. This is a protest at the White House against this pipeline from the Alberta tar sands in Canada, all the way to Texas. Approximately 1,500 people signed up to voluntarily be arrested during this two-week action outside the White House, which begins tomorrow morning. And according to the Guardian of the UK, this is how they report it in the foreign press. The campaign is seen as a last chance to persuade Barack Obama to stop a planned 1,600-mile pipeline that will carry oil from the tar sands of Alberta across rich American farmland to the Gulf of Mexico. The State Department is expected to produce its final environmental analysis of the pipeline by the end of the month. Obama will then have 90 days to decide whether going ahead with the project would be in the national interest. The Keystone XL project, that's its name. The Keystone XL project has been a major force or focus of environmental protests. Greenhouse gas emissions of tar sands crude are 40% higher than conventional oil, and the open pit mining has devastated Alberta's forest, boreal forest. What does that mean, boreal? Does that mean primitive? Recent pipeline accidents in Michigan and Montana have also deepened fears about potential dangers along the pipeline's route through prime American farmland. Bill McKibben, veteran environmentalist who is leading the protest describes it as the biggest civil disobedience action in environmental circles for years. It also puts Obama on the spot to make good on his promise as a presidential candidate in 2008 to act on climate change. I'm sorry. That gives me the giggles. You know, anytime I see a sentence that has within it the phrase make good on his campaign promise and the name Obama, I just start to giggle sarcastically and ugly, in an ugly way. And, you know, I just start to get, really? Like a campaign promise of find some comfortable shoes and marching on the picket line? Ah, Mr. President? Okay. All right. Well, here you get another shot. Huh? Okay. We'll see. Congress failed to act on the main plank of Obama's green agenda. Climate change legislation and pressure from Tea Party activists has forced the EPA to delay or weaken regulations on dealing with climate change. Pressure from Tea Party activists has forced the EPA. Are you hearing that? What would happen if 5,000 armed to the teeth Russian or Chinese, who do you want to pick? All right, let's go with the Chinese. Chinese soldiers showed up in front of the EPA, and all locked and loaded and ready to commit murder, and demanded that the EPA weaken regulations on climate change, dealing with climate change, you know, the emissions. What do you suppose would happen? Do you think they would call out the U.S. Marines? Now these soldiers, these foreign soldiers, Russian, Chinese, I don't know, Slobovian, doesn't matter. They're not threatening anybody. They're just, you know, they're here. I know they're on J-1 visas. They came here with work permits to work over the summer at Hershey Candy Company or whatever. But they show up with their weapons and they demand the EPA make this change. What do you think would happen to them? Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I think would happen to them, too. But somehow, these punk-ass Tea Party activists have more power than, I don't know, pick a number, regiment, squad, platoon, battalion of fully armed foreign soldiers. A handful of pissy little Tea Party activists has more power because that handful is able to force the EPA to weaken or delay regulations dealing with climate change. Damn. Man, that's really something, huh? Isn't that a Tea Party? Boreal forest. Relating to or marked by qualities associated with the north wind. Toward or located in the north. Comprising or throughout far northern regions. Well, thank you. Who sent that to me? GK. Boreal. Oh, like Aurora Borealis. Now, jeez, Mike. But I digress. The time is now, Bill McKibben says, that Obama has freedom of action. Obama must personally sign off on the pipeline if it's to go ahead. McKibben said, quote, "We think we may have a chance because for once Obama gets to make the call himself. He has to sign or not sign the permit. It has nothing to do with Congress. It's up to him. Sign or not sign this permit." And McKibben adds, "As environmentalists, this is the one clean test we are ever going to get of Obama's real commitment to climate change." Well, see, I didn't know that. Did you know that? So it's all rests in the ink cylinder of Barack Obama's pen, the musculoskeletal structure of his arm, wrist, hand, and fingers. The Tea Party can do nothing. The Republicans can do nothing. The Democrats can do nothing. It is all up to Obama. Will he sign, and upon signing, open up the floodgates for this filth, or will he not sign? We wait with abated breath. We'll be right back.
revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. So the protest against this pipeline, the Keystone XL project, will begin tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. in front of the White House. A group of 100 activists will gather, wait to be arrested. And according to, and again, you have to go to the foreign press for this, or you can go to their website, but the Guarding the UK, unlike other campaigns, the next 2 weeks' actions have geographical reach, with protesters descending on Washington from areas along the pipeline's route. The campaign against the pipeline has steadily been gaining in momentum and concerns about pipeline safety. The pipeline route crosses rich farmland and important aquifers. Oil companies don't give a goddamn about an aquifer. They probably couldn't even tell you what it is. Aquifer? What's that? Water somewhere? Oh, okay. Campaigners against this argue that the thick, heavy tar sands crude could do far more damage than conventional oil, and that the State Department has rushed through its environmental review. And the oil company industry, meanwhile, pushed back with a study this week claiming the pipeline would create 20,000 new construction jobs. Oh, well then! How many new construction jobs would there be if the Obama administration would move toward green energy? A million? So, you know what the meme is going to be. Are you going to vote against jobs? Of course. That's the way they always do, isn't it? Against jobs. John in Raleigh writes, I was glad that the advocate on Democracy Now! Had a debate on the Alberta pipeline today. And John writes, I'm glad the advocate against the pipeline mentioned that the oil would not be sold to the U.S., but would be put on the international market. The advocate for the pipeline had claimed it would create jobs and the oil would be sold in the U.S. and Canada. Some of it might, but it's not. I mean, this is the thing that pisses me off. Every time we got to drill more because we got to free ourselves from foreign oil. You know, the implication being that if we punch more holes in the ground here in the United States, well, that's ours. You think these oil companies give a goddamn where it's sold? Oh, come on. Do you think ExxonMobil really, you know, what, huh? They don't care. Oil price is oil price. And if they sell it here, they don't get such visible kickbacks. Well, they get, you know, they get the depletion allowances and all the other garbage. But if they go to a different country that is struggling to build up its industrial base, heaven knows how much kickback they will get from corrupt officials, right? Huh? Or, in some instances, the other way around. The oil companies will be happy to pay to the corrupt officials to sell their oil there. But as far as the American consumer, oh, for God's sake, do you still believe that? I know you teabag dumbasses do. Well, it's American oil. Yeah, it's American energy. It's going to be sold here. Wake up and smell the petrol, you freak. God. And Sanchez writes, the State Department's environmental report will be a joke. Obama will sign the pipeline deal. What has not been reported by anyone in the so-called progressive media is there is a major conflict of interest here. Hillary Clinton is the Secretary of State, right? And the State Department has to sign off on this, right? Because it crosses an international boundary, right? Okay. Hillary Clinton's former campaign manager is now a lobbyist for the pipeline owner. The article about this was written and reported by Rose Aguilar from KALW-FM in San Francisco. If you want to see it, go to uprisingradio.org. Uprisingradio.org. Because the pipeline would cross the U.S. border, it has to be approved by the State Department. That means Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has the power to derail the project. But her former deputy campaign manager, Paul Elliott, is now a lobbyist for TransCanada, the sole owner of the pipeline. Well, okay then. There you go. Yee-hee. Rock and roll. Here come the tar sands crude. Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble. Hillary Clinton's former deputy campaign manager, a lobbyist for TransCanada, the sole owner, really, the sole owner, Sanchez, the sole owner of the company, or the pipeline. So anybody want to take any wagers here? I mean, you know, among your friends, I'm not allowed. Although I'd like to, but I'm not allowed. Anybody want to make any wagers, though, as to whether or not Barack Obama signs this? It's entirely up to him. It's his baby. Will he sign? Will he not sign? What do you think? We'll be right back.
Of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
From now, we'll do podcast trivia and give away a free one-year subscription of podcast downloads to this program. This hour, again, is sponsored by Bruce Roby, and his message is a happy 95th birthday, Helen Posey of Eugene, Oregon. In my 95 years of experience, all problems in the world are from one source, religion. Go to the Freedom From Religion Foundation website now. It is ffrf.org. FFRF.org. It's a good website. So, are you going to monitor or check out any reports at all about this action that begins tomorrow in front of the White House? I am. We will we'll be lost back in the mountains going camping again in the North Georgia Mountains up near Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee. But Kathy has one of those magic... What is that? A G4 thingy that slides into your computer and you can pick it? Not G4. What am I? Yeah, what is it? What's that little thing that goes into your computer, your little laptop? And you can get signals from Mars.
Yeah, that's called a modem.
You just love that, don't you? You love it.
Actually, I don't.
You know, you've forgotten more about pewters than I'll ever know, right? Anyway, we will be doing our best to follow what is happening, but. I hope that the number of people there will be so great as to overwhelm. This begins one of several planned demonstrations involving civil disobedience in Washington. The next big one that I'm aware of is October, the week leading up to October 6th. And that's the one I'm going to be at. So I hope that this filthy media that we have in this country, mainstream media, will at least make an effort to cover the events beginning tomorrow. And that's great video, isn't it, guys and gals, that all you cable, weekend cable networks, all you play on the weekends, all you show is garbage. Anyway, the great video, you're going to see actual Americans being arrested by SWAT police in D.C. or National Park Police, depending on where the arrests occur. I mean, that's great video. There's not a, or shouldn't be, used to not be, assignment editor, weekend assignment editor anywhere in cable television. Hey, look here! They're arresting Americans! Hot damn, let's go! But, of course, that was back in the day when there was still a little bit of independence among the news-gathering organizations, such as they are. I'm sure over the weekend, though, you will hear about ever more numbers of disappearing white women who go with traveling companions down to Aruba or someplace and all of a sudden turn up missing. That will fill your news screens tomorrow. Hey, let me ask you something. True Seekers, as long as we're on the usual topics that we're on this program, the Obama administration has offered condolences to the attacks in southern Israel that occurred the other day. The White House statement refers to them as, quote, brutal terrorist attacks, end quote. And the statement says, we condemn the brutal terrorist attacks in southern Israel today in the strongest terms. Our deepest condolences go to the victims, their families and loved ones, and we wish those injured a speedy recovery. The U.S. and Israel stand united against terror, and we hope that those behind this attack will be brought to justice swiftly. And then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton joined in that condemnation. Her office issued a statement. The United States condemns today's attacks in southern Israel and all acts of terrorism in the strongest terms. These brutal and cowardly attacks appear to be premeditated acts of terrorism against innocent civilians. Our deepest condolences go out to the victims, their families, and loved ones. Then it says something else. And then it says, United States and Israel are united, united in the fight against terror. We hope that those involved in the planning of these gruesome attacks will be brought to swift justice. We stand by Israel as our friend, partner, and ally now and always. Not always, Mrs. Clinton and Mr. President, not always. When Israel commits acts of terror against Palestinian civilians, there is kind of a bland condemnation. You know, why is it? Why are there never condolences offered to the victims of Israeli occupation or the victims of torture in Israeli prisons or the families and villages forced into forced relocations of, Palestinian civilians? Or when olive groves are uprooted, centuries-old olive groves on Palestinian territory that the Israeli settlers decide they want. Why are there no condolences when people are killed by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force? Well, I mean, everybody, in my opinion, should condemn outright acts of terror. Absolutely. I don't care who does it, no matter how justified or righteous your cause is. To kill innocent civilians as a way of making a political statement. This is where it gets a little gray, doesn't it? Is the action between the Israelis and the Palestinians simply ever-escalating political statements, or is there an actual war? A war of liberation? A war of domination? A war of occupation? What? Anybody care to identify what is going on in Israel/Palestine/occupied territory/Gaza/? All we know is that innocent people on both sides are being killed regularly. And in most instances, mercilessly, by both sides. When does the condemnation of Israel's actions really stand out the way the condemnation of the actions by Palestinians come so swiftly after one of these brutal attacks? And they are brutal, and they are disgusting, and they are horrifying, and they should stop, shouldn't they? And we won't talk about provocation, shall we? We shouldn't do that, because that would be to legitimize acts of terror against civilians. So we won't talk about 60 years of provocation. We'll let that slide. But I can't remember. Maybe it was yesterday or last week or 6 months ago, but I simply can't remember. Maybe it's a function of a fading memory here, but I can't remember when Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton stood up on their hind legs and said, we absolutely, utterly, completely condemn the actions taken today by the IDF against innocent Palestinians going about their business. Has that happened? Are the acts on both sides brutal? Yes. Are they disgusting? Yes. Then why is one condemned and the other isn't? Or if the other is condemned, it is in such mealy-mouthed, bland terms as to render the condemnation practically meaningless. But this brutal terrorist attacks, it's called, which they were. Gruesome attacks, which they were. Running over people with Israeli bulldozers, that's pretty gruesome too, isn't it? Shooting unarmed Palestinian children, that's pretty brutal too, isn't it? So, fair is fair, n'est-ce pas? Isn't it? Isn't fair fair? You kill my children, I'll kill yours. And then the third party over there can say, ooh, condemnations against both of you. Isn't that the way it should be? I mean, as long as we two peoples, united by the same God, as long as we've decided we're going to butcher each other's innocent civilians, as long as we're going to do that, shouldn't the third party standing over there with its thumb in its ass occasionally condemn both sides instead of just one? Nah. Of course not. That would be... I don't know what that would be.
Stick my head in the sand. Sometimes I'm grand, but all of this violence is killing me. Silence is filling me. No, no, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. It takes a lifetime to learn what's been lost. Why are we all fighting? Oh, why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong, forgetting where we've come from. And all of this violence is killing me. Silence is...
It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Bruce Roby. Thanks, Bruce. He has a message. Happy 95th birthday, Helen Posey of Eugene, Oregon, and my 95 years of experience. I don't know if that's Bruce's 95 years or Helen's, but that'd be pretty cool if a 95-year-old sponsor was celebrating the birthday of a 95-year-old honoree. I think that's pretty cool. It makes no difference. We thank you, Bruce. And happy 95th birthday to Helen Posey. In my 95 years of experience, all problems in the world are from one source, religion. Go to Freedom From Religion Foundation website now, ffrf.org. ffrf.org. Michael in Roswell points out, of course, that state terrorism, i.e. that committed by Israel, that committed by the United States, state terrorism is never defined by the state terrorists as terrorism. And regarding Israel, well, we have the real Judeo-Christian God on our side, right? Oh, my goodness. Let's see how many emails I get now saying, you're an anti-Semite! Oh, my God. Do you want to hear this? This is kind of interesting. This is from Pierce, who writes, Mike, I was reading For Whom the Bell Tolls, the novel by the great American author Ernest Hemingway, last week. As you may know, the book is about an American guerrilla fighter against the fascists in the Spanish Civil War. There's a great scene where the band of Spanish Republicans, small r, of course, Spanish Republican guerrillas are questioning the American about politics in America. Okay, now remember, this is written in the late 30s. Do you have big proprietors? Andres asked to the American Robert Jordan. Do you have big proprietors? Many, Jordan replied. Then there must be abuses. Well, certainly there's abuses. But will you do away with them? We try more and more, but there are abuses still. But there are not great estates that must be broken up? Yeah, but there are those who believe taxes will break them up. How? Robert Jordan, wiping out the stew bowl with bread, explained how the income tax and the inheritance tax worked. He said, but the big estates remain, and there are taxes on the land. Primitivo said, but surely the big proprietors and the rich will make a revolution against such taxes. Such taxes appear to me to be revolutionary. They will revolt against the government when they see that they are threatened, exactly as the fascists have done here. It's possible, Jordan said. Then will you have to fight in your country as we fight here? Yes, we will have to fight. But there are not many fascists in your country. There are many who do not know they're fascists, but will find out when the time comes. But you cannot destroy them until they come. No, Robert Jordan said, we cannot destroy them. But we can educate the people so that they will fear fascism and recognize it as it appears and combat it. End quote. When Hemingway wrote this in 1939, he perfectly predicted what is happening today. Unfortunately, we have been manipulated and misinformed and thus are not educated enough to recognize the fascism in America. I believe we've reached the point where using the political system to reform corporate fascism is gone. And when Americans finally do recognize what has happened, it'll be violent revolution. I hope you read the dialogue on air sometime, or at least read it to yourself. Thank you very much. Pierce. Yeah, we have received in this country so many warnings by poets and novelists, and occasionally by a political scientist, but mostly by poets and novelists, writers, who do not suffer the kind of provincial mindset that so many of us Americans seem to be caught up in. The writers and the poets who travel freely around the country, around the globe, and now and then, you know, now in our time and back in Hemingway's time, or whoever, pick a writer, and because of their global travel or international travel, see things that a provincial American does not see. Somebody that stays in his town or spends all of his time listening to the preacher on Sunday radio telling him he is condemned to hell unless he does something, or the political commentator on right-wing radio who tells him he is condemned to hell unless he does something. And, you know, the writer, the artist, the poet gets out and says, wait a second. Whoa, stop, back up here. Hold on just a second. something I want to tell you about fascism. It'll come to America wrapped in a flag and holding a Bible. But, of course, you know, like Obama inadvertently said, when things get rough out in the United States, people grab for their Bibles and guns. That's not exactly what he said, but that is so true, isn't it? Give me my Bible, give me my gun, because I'm terrified. Rather than confront the terror that is really devouring you and your family and your home and your business and your mind, let's blame it on those liberals. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. It is kind of cool. This hour is sponsored by James Herlihy here on the Malloy program. And his message, let's do something different this time. How about some bad Mike Malloy haiku? Okay, here's one. Right winger drones on. Mike rolls his eyes with disdain. Out comes the ice pick. All right. I like that. James Herlihy, our sponsor this hour. Thanks, James. And thanks for the haiku. A couple of emails here. This is from Jeff Ramsey. This has some geographical information, some economic information. Jeff writes, Mike, the gutting of the workforce in the United States has been accomplished and nothing will stop the steamroller. It's global now. I just returned from Spain, where unemployment in Andalusia is 40%. Don't believe the news. It's way above the 9% BS figure. The college-educated unemployed in Spain are interviewing by the thousands to go to work in technical fields in Germany, the only country left that functions. I've never seen prices so high as they are in Spain. A decent, quote-quote, dinner for two equals $80. When I lived in Spain in the 1970s, the dollar was strong. One could live really reasonably well on little. Not today. It is so expensive, I could not believe how bad it is. My friends in Spain said that when the euro came on board in the EU, the cost of living in Spain went up 30% overnight. In Almeria, Spain, the coast has the largest farming acreage under plastic on Earth. They literally grow the vegetables for Europe. The labor is supplied by Moros, Africans, Arabs, each August. They crowd the highways, leaving to take the ferries to Africa on vacation. The astronauts can see the plastic covering on the farms from space. Ugliest thing you ever saw. Poor España, the land I love so much, is under siege by predatory capitalists and immigrants with nothing in common with the Spanish. Poor Mother Earth is turning into a blank. I can't say that word, Jeff. The president, Zapatero, is so hated that the Spanish want him strung up like Mussolini. And guess what? The fascists are coming back. Not unlike the USA, the pigs are going to take over. When times go bad, in march the jackboots. People are so misguided, they always take their own best interests and dump them and let the predators take over. The same old cycle as for the USA. We are in for nothing but bad times. I wonder what Alan Greenspan is doing tonight. That ghoul that took down the world. Jeff. And from Shane, subject line is Malloy Social Democracy. Okay, let's see what Shane has here. Mike, I was thinking along these lines as well, both of nationalizing infrastructure and regulating industry. I'd like to see backing to currency, and also agree with the fair tax, with possible addition of taxes for commuting distances and shipping distances, as well as trade tariffs. Here's where I go out into both fields. Mandatory individual retirement savings accounts indexed to inflation, taking at least, say, 38% of your income. If you become disabled or decide to retire, your account is funded to you over the rest of your expected lifetime, adjusted up to the local cost of living as necessary by the government. The only sorts of businesses should be individually owned or employee owned, with strict labor and environmental regulations and no taxes. Bank loans should all be secured or insured without interest and only a percent origination fee, say 3%, plus a one-time insurance fee based on your credit amount, the amount of the loan, so on and so forth, included in the cost of the loan. If your credit isn't good enough and you have no collateral, you have to save like people used to. Education about the dangers of exponential population growth and probably restrictions, but no Republican death camps hospitals. Preventive health care, proven to be the most cost-effective, would be provided by government. Emergency or urgent care could be prorated by income. And instead of three branches of government, I propose multiple branches, like 9, that would replace current departments. They would be placed in regional locations, each have their own forms of income, would manage their own programs as they saw fit, but their pay would be managed by the public rating their services. All government jobs would be rated and indexed, so a job requiring a person with a bachelor's degree and 3 years' experience would get paid the same. Strict separation of church, state, business, and citizens. No person who has ever made above 70th percentile of income or ran a business should hold office or be a regulator. Bribery would have no statute of limitations. Some sort of earnings cap, which would basically allow people to retire earlier. I'd better stop. Shane. Well, some good ideas in there, Shane. I don't agree with all of it, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I agree with. Some good ideas in there. And from Alan, subject line, cheery news. Then he writes, disregard the title. There is no cheery news. Well, there is, but not for humans. Go ahead, be a downer. I have no problem with reality, my friend. You seem very upbeat compared to me. What he's writing about is, you know, what I was saying the other night about, it's, you know, always down stuff on this program. Please remember this as you are a gentleman of a certain age, in parentheses, mine. Remember this. Nixon created the EPA and signed the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act and funded urban planners and scientific research to beat the ban. And other than his bloody insane paranoia, may have been our most liberal president since our mothers delivered us into this woeful world. Except for Vietnam, that is. And then, like now, that was to keep his sorry ass from being deleted by a black op ordered by the real powers in this country. They who must not be named. Eisenhower knew them, should have kept his mouth shut. You are correct about Obama. He's neither the wimpiest president ever. He is either the wimpiest president ever or is a dominionist Republican himself. He surely is no liberal. You don't need to apologize for recognizing the truth. And if the EPA is totally destroyed, I'm in a real pickle. what to do to defend our planet from flying naked monkeys. This is a serious quandary for me. I do not love naked monkeys. I prefer earthworms, sharks, and leeches to their company. I have been amused by your flying monkey right comments, as I have always referred to Homo sapiens as naked monkeys. Adding flying to it just improves the mental image. I really have doubts about the sapiens part of the species name, as there is no evidence for such an attribute. Frankly, given peak oil, peak other resources, and climate shifts, I suspect that the people problem will fix itself soon enough. It will take a while, but everything will be better after a few hundred years. I hope the next sentient creature will use us as an example to their children. Do you know what a marker fossil is? It is an index fossil for a geological or geologic strata, helping to identify that strata on a world or region-wide basis. Ours will be the plastic rings that go on soda cans and the other plastic crap like rubber duckies, since they will be there for effing ever. Best to you and your family. Find some nice spot to keep for your family when the crashes come, as they must. Keep that permit current. I suspect the Dominionists will be looking for me and for you. And enjoy the attached graph. Very interesting. Signed, Alan, and his last name. We'll be right back. Back in the next break, it'll be podcast trivia. So during the break, Kathy will open the lines. Oh, you're going to open them now? Oh, okay. 877-996-2556 is the number. This is for podcast trivia. After we do that, then we'll open the lines for, you know, regular calls. But if you'd like to do podcast trivia, the number is 877-996-2556. We ask you a question, multiple choice answer. If you get it right, you get a 1-year subscription to Molloy Program podcast downloads free with a retail value of almost $57. Ah, which works out to 25 cents a program, which is why we call this a 2-bit radio show. Jeremy writes, it strikes me odd how so very many Americans support Israel and shun the Palestinians when acts of violence occur. 124 Israeli children have been killed by Palestinians, and 1,463 Palestinian children have been killed by Israelis since September 29, 2000. 1,084 Israelis and at least 6,430 Palestinians have been killed since September 29, 2000. One Israeli is being held prisoner by Palestinians, while 5,935 Palestinians are currently imprisoned by Israel. Zero
Israeli homes have been demolished by Palestinians, and 24,813 Palestinian homes have been demolished by Israel since 1967. What makes this all so sick is the fact that during fiscal year 2011, the U.S. is providing Israel with at least $8.2 million per day in military aid, and with $0 per day in military aid to the Palestinians. We are, therefore, active sponsors of terrorism, state terrorism. Jeremy. Yeah, and I think the state terrorism that we support with money and weaponry, examples of that support of state terrorism are certainly not limited to Israel. We provide the wherewithal for state terrorism to, I don't know how many countries currently, but I have a feeling it's probably in double digits, high double digits, possibly more than that. It is the, the one growth industry in this country that is consistently a growth industry is the weapons industry, the destruction industry, the death industry, the murder industry, the war industry, all of which is the same, all of which are the same industry. And of course, we, with no irony intended whatsoever, we call that the Defense Department. We call that the Defense Department, the Defense Department. We have military bases in, 90 different countries, which represents, I guess, part of that, unintended irony of defense rather than, the Defense Department and the U.S. government, no matter who runs it, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, and I say that advisedly. I know a Democrat doesn't run it, and I know Republicans don't run it. It is run by the capitalist state now. We are a capitalist security state, and people like the Koch brothers run it. Because since this is capitalism, money talks. Everything else is superfluous. But those bases in 90 different countries are not there defending freedom. To the contrary, they are defending fascism, defending repression, defending state terrorism, so that capitalist America has a quiet, orderly society in which to do its devilry. But you know that. You know that. Are we going to suggest that a military base in... Oh, never mind. Why even make the example? Those are the military bases that we know about. We also know that we have two militaries now that are run by the government. The standard armed forces that we're all familiar with and the CIA. Then, of course, we have private military forces that also operate so far outside the law as to render them, I don't know, to render them almost a fourth branch of government. Your appetite for destruction. But I ramble. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, podcast trivia. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. You or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever learn? How many Iraqis per gallon? Endless killing spree. How many kids can you kill? Once again, it's time for podcast trivia here on the Malloy Program. By the way, this hour is sponsored by James Herlihy, whose message is in haiku form. Right-winger drones on. Mike rolls his eyes with disdain. Out comes the ice pick. Thank you, James. Podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year gift subscription to yourself of Molloy Program podcast downloads. They are commercial-free. Be in your mailbox every morning. All you have to do is get the correct answer to our question. let us see who is first in the barrel here. Looks like it's Paul in Canton, Georgia. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You ready to try this?
Oh, give it a shot. Yep.
Okay, here we go. This week, rapture-ready Texas governor and Republican presidential hopeful Rick Goodhair Perry let his political base and the rest of the U.S. know where he stands on the issues most important to being the next president. He declared which of the following? A. The science of evolution. A. The science of evolution is an idea with, you know, some gaps. B. Global warming is, you know, a cult organized by crazed renegade scientists with a liberal agenda. C. The head of the Federal Reserve, you know, could be guilty of treason, and if so, by legal prescription, should be executed. D. U.S. soldiers, you know, have no respect for Barack Obama, their commander-in-chief. E. All of the above.
I'm going to go with E, all of the above.
I think you're absolutely right. All right, Paul. That was relatively easy, but
yes,
what the hell? Yeah. All right, Paul, let me put you on hold, and Kathy will get the pertinent information, and you'll get the one-year subscription. Thanks a lot, okay?
Thanks very much, Mike.
All right, sir, hold on. Yeah. All of that in 1 week out of the mouth of someone who wants to be president of the United States. Science, evolution is wrong. Global warming, wrong. How the Federal Reserve should be executed. And U.S. soldiers. I mean, what a thing to say. What a thing to say. Most U.S. soldiers are young. They have no idea why they're really putting on the uniform. Well, they know why they're putting on the uniform, and for the most part, it's to find a job and health care and some sort of income. For a lesser part, it's a misguided idea of patriotism that in a nuclear age is ludicrous where it concerns ground forces. In an age of dying empire, it is suicidal where it concerns ground forces. But they do it anyway because they are young and because they are convinced that war is nothing more than animated war games, video games, with them not sitting in front of a council but actually in the game with weaponry that is lethal. The terrible part is when these young kids find out that the bullets that fly around them will do devastating damage to their bodies, will kill them, will rip half their heads off. And the IEDs that explode while they're driving to some godforsaken village out in the desert will also rip off their legs, shatter their lives for the rest of their lives, or kill them. And the survivors, the ones who are not brutally mutilated or blown to pieces, are left with the images of their buddy, which is why they fight. It's to preserve and defend their friend, their buddy. It has nothing to do with flag or mom or apple pie. The horror here, the horror, is that these young men and women do not understand that capitalist America sends them into these meat grinders with absolutely no concern about their safety, their well-being, or the final outcome. They don't care. Capitalist America does not care. And arguably never has. So it is, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. It affects me so deeply, having reached maturity prior to the, during, I guess, I'm talking about age, the Vietnam era, and having almost been drafted and being deferred because I had a speeding ticket where the fine was over $200. Yeah. Well, this was before Westmoreland and Johnson ordered 500,000 more American young men into the grinder that was the murder machine that was Vietnam. But I see the pictures. I see these young people now who are deploying to, either for the first time or the fifth time, to one of the areas where our wars of choice were ordered by very sick, twisted, murderous leaders in this country. And then you see the pictures of them coming home, the ones that that do come home. It's just, I don't know. I guess the older one gets, there is a divergent path at some point where you either become totally gung-ho about American military power and use it any place, anytime, anywhere necessary to stomp the sons of bitches not going along with our program into compliance, or the other fork of that road is war in any aspect except absolute self-defense on a literal basis at the gates, you know, invaders at the gates. War of any other sort is disgusting. It is vile. It should be stopped. It is no good. And the young men and young women now who are sacrificed into that war machine are just that. Sacrifices. And any statement to the contrary is garbage. Just total garbage. And there go more of our young people being blown to pieces, and more of our young people committing acts that are unspeakable. And they know they are. They know the acts are unspeakable. What a sad state of affairs. Well, Michael in Roswell has an answer where Alan Greenspan is. Somebody wrote in, where's Alan Greenspan with all this? You know, the architect, one of the architects. I mean, you have to go back. There are other players. Clinton, what's his name? Phil, who is the senator from Texas, who went on to become a board member of UBS in Switzerland. Phil, he also was in the had money in the porn industry. He's from Texas. You know who I'm talking about. He had money in the porn industry just like Rick Perry does. Phil Graham. Anyway, the question was, what's Alan Greenspan doing? Michael writes, I can tell you what Alan Greenspan is doing. He and Andrea Mitchell, his wife, are having martinis and cocktail weenies on some fat cat's patio in Martha's Vineyard. And he's whining about not being taken seriously anymore. And his wife is Sato Voki, yapping about the moochers. If history repeats itself, it's August 1929 again. Sato Voki, excuse me. I got into an argument one time. I said it's Sato Voki, using the Latin. And somebody said, you know, you're such a phony-ass little intellectual. Has nothing to do with Latin and everything to do with Italian. There's no Latin there. Right. Okay. Well, whatever. Whatever. Oh, dear God. What else have I got here? I think maybe there's a whole list of things here, but I think maybe what would be a good idea would be to take some calls if you're interested. 877-996-2556. And did I mention yet tonight the website, October2011.org, October2011.org. You might want to check it out. This is the event that's occurring first week in October in Washington, D.C. The website, October2011.org. 877-996-2556. We'll take, Kathy will get your call and put you on hold during this break. So, stick around. Truthdig.org. I'm not going to get to this tonight, I have a feeling. America is a spark away from riots of its own. We might have to do that next week. All right, we'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by James Herlihy. Thank you, James. And his message is a haiku. Right-winger drones on. Mike rolls his eyes with disdain. Out comes the ice pick. Didn't we do a haiku contest at one time, Kathy, years ago? God, a decade ago? That was a lot of fun. I wrote a bunch and we posted them at our then website. Was that Air America days or pre-Air America? I forget. IE America days. Thanks for the sponsorship, James. Robert is in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Mr. Malloy. It's a pleasure talking to you. Long time listener, second time caller.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I enjoy your show. I listen to you, Randy, you know, and all the others, and Alex Jones, stuff of that nature. I have a couple questions for you, though.
Okay.
Real quick, just out of curiosity, if your show's radio supported, why are there commercials? Which, you know, I don't understand the business world. I was just curious.
Wait, I didn't hear the question. Go ahead. Say it again.
You said that the show was radio listener supported, so I was just curious. Okay, why are there commercials? Why can't you just say?
No,
I'm just curious.
No, I've never said it's listener supported. We are a commercial. Oh. We are a commercial enterprise. We are carried by radio stations. We web stream. We're carried by Sirius and XM. We have, our syndicator is, Dial Global, which also syndicates several other radio programs. They are responsible, they are responsible for ad placement. Plus, radio stations that carry our program also sell advertising around the program, as does XM and Sirius.
Okay.
What you hear me talking about where it concerns the sponsorships, these are people, these are people who want to sponsor an hour for whatever reason. And there is a way to do that by going to our website.
Right, yeah, I visited your website and I was thinking about doing that, but okay, I was just curious, that was just something menial, but, my second question is, you know, the corporatists, you know, that they're taking over and stuff of that nature, and mark my words today, Rick Perry will be president simply because of one word, Bilderberg. Clinton was at Bilderberg, he was president. Obama was at Bilderberg, he's president, period. But, you know, sometimes listening to your show, You know, all over the world we're seeing these uprisings. We're seeing this country uprise against our government and yada, yada, yada. And I know sometimes you comment, you say, you know, what will it take? Yet we Americans sit. I mean, what's it going to take for us to whatever?
Right.
Well, I'm wondering, what do you want us to do? And how? I mean, all of our liberties are being taken away. They're going back for our guns.
Okay, let me see if I can answer, Robert. Let me see if I can answer, because I understand the question. It's one that I talk about all the time. If you were a regular listener, you would know that, matter of fact, I think I brought this up last night or the night before. There's several things to do. First of all, there was an old-time organizer, well, not that old, Saul Alinsky, who wrote books on organizing. And his favorite phrase was organize, organize, organize. The American people in small groups, you start out with small groups, you organize in your neighborhood, you organize in your civic club, you organize around your health club. You find people who are of the same mindset as you are. There are millions of Americans who are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And it's just a matter of organizing. That takes work. Most Americans are so divorced from political work as to render the whole idea just something they can't even get their minds around. But organizing is the first thing to do. The next thing to do is to realize that our political economic system, which has become one entity along with fundamentalist Christianity, that system is totally broken. It cannot be repaired. It can only continue along the path that it's on now. It is not, let me repeat it, not going to change. I don't care who is in office. Even if we had Bernie Sanders as president, it will not change. The system needs to be stopped and replaced. And that's going to require an awful lot of work, and it's going to require an awful lot of time. But it can be done. It's been done in other countries. Most other countries where it was done subsequent to a horrific event inside their boundaries, usually a war. Not a civil war necessarily, but as a result of war. When war devastates the country, and the country then, if there's anything left to rebuild, does begin to rebuild, some attention is paid to how the institutions worked before the war came. Now, I don't think anyone is going to attack the United States, so we're going to take war off the table here, so to speak. So we have to stop the system that is destroying everything, including my family, your family, the air you breathe, whether or not you have a job. It's destroying everything. And the way you do that is organize, organize, organize. You find candidates that you can run for congressional offices. It doesn't take a lot of effort to get somebody's name on a ballot. And that person can have, it doesn't make any difference how they designate their party affiliation. Sometimes you have to, declare a party affiliation in order to get on a ballot. That's how screwed up the system is. So you declare yourself a Democrat or Republican. It doesn't matter. You accept no money from any political action committees. You run a campaign that's based on support from the people. You get yourself elected. And, you do this 300 or 400 times across the country until all of a sudden you have a force in place in the U.S. House of Representatives that can stop or start anything it wants to. And then you have the beginning of what it's going to take to pull this rotten system down and replace it with something that is life-sustaining instead of life-threatening. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
7 past the hour. Welcome back. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. Anonymous again, huh? The message is about Leah Burton's book. We talked about, matter of fact, she phoned in last night. We chatted for a minute. God, what is it? God, Guns, and Greed. And Anonymous writes, Leah Burton's work in exposing the dominionists and their web of taking over America on all levels. The Seven Mountain Mandate is what it's called. Not the book, but what the dominionists are talking about. Check it out. Go to, here's a website, godsownparty.com. godsownparty.com. Scary stuff. All right, thanks, Anonymous. You know, I mentioned before, there when I was a kid growing up, I read Reader's Digest all the time because it was there. You know, my parents got it, my grandma got it. I don't know Reader's Digest from from the Book of Mormon, but it was always there. So I'd read it. And there were certain little sections that I really liked. Life in these United States, Humor in Uniform, Only in America, all those little sections that had little funny stuff. At least it was funny to the editors of the Wall Street Journal, who, it turns out, were just extreme right-wingers. And there was a section, It Pays to Increase Your Word Power. Do you remember all these? Pardon Your Slip is showing. Little typos that appeared in other magazines and newspapers. Oh, whatever. Oh, it was such an innocent time, wasn't it? Pardon Your Slip is showing. You know, people now say, what's a slip? Excuse me. So, when I saw this article earlier this week, we didn't get a chance to get to it. So tonight would probably be a pretty good time. There is a program, a foreign exchange program, foreign students, who in their home countries, they pay money, they get money together, anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000. And it has a name, it's the J-1 program, which designates their entry visa status into this country. It's a J-1. Now, what they do, they come over here for a few weeks in the summer. The idea being that they go to work for some corporation, from capitalist operation, and they earn some money, and then they spend some time traveling and being around the U.S. and being exposed to U.S. culture. U.S. culture. Oh, my God. What is that? Jersey Shore? I mean, U.S. culture. Okay, whatever. And the idea, of course, on all these programs, whether it's our students going to a different company or country, I should say, or U.S. Or foreign students coming here, the idea is that cross-pollination or that cross-exposure will supersede some of the propaganda that they hear from governments. Of course, the kids who come here are not aware, I guess, until they get here, that government and capitalism are exactly the same, that our system now has been so completely corrupted, and in some instances, like their home systems, so completely corrupted that there is no separation, there is no daylight between the worst predatory aspects of capitalism and the total dysfunction of government once it's been eaten alive by something like capitalism. Once capitalism ingests whatever form of government is at hand, you know, eats it, devours it, then what operates as a system of government is not what was intended at all. It's like some kind of a digested or partially digested thing still trying to operate. It's pretty hideous. Pretty graphic images there, right? Yeah, it upsets me too. Anyway, these kids come over, young people come over and go to work. Well, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, I was reading in the Times an article. A bunch of students, 300 of them, went to work at a packaging warehouse for Hershey's chocolates over in near Hershey, PA. Now, what is more American than Hershey's chocolates? I mean, globally, there are certain brands that are just United States, no matter what, right? McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and most of it is junk and crap and stuff that will ultimately kill you. Marlboro's. But Hershey chocolates, which I guess if you eat enough would make you grossly obese and kill you too. But let's not go there. Let's just, it's an American brand. Hershey Kisses. Who doesn't know about Hershey Kisses? Who doesn't know about a Hershey bar? I mean, it's iconic. World War II soldiers walking into liberated Paris or liberated cities and towns in Germany and Poland and all over Europe. And what was the first thing? You'd break out a Hershey bar to give to the kids who would come scampering up, right? Iconic Hershey bar. Much older product, an American symbol than say, McDonald's or the rest of this crap. Not older than Coca-Cola, but you know. All right. So 300 students, foreign students, come over here to go to work. The students are from, oh, my God, look at the list here. Turkey, China, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Romania, Mongolia, Moldova, Poland, Ghana. They were hired into the J-1 visa program, which allows foreign university students to work in the U.S. for 2 months and then travel. Now, the idea, the basic idea is let them practice English, make some money, learn what America's like. The chances are, if you're out and about during the summer, if you're traveling across the country and you run into foreign students who are working, summer jobs at hotels or restaurants or whatever, tourist attractions, more than likely you are face-to-face with one of these J-1 designated students. Well, guess what happened? Yeah, you're probably way ahead of me on this. 300 of these foreign students walked off the job at Hershey and staged a protest rally. Saying that this wasn't the America that they had paid to see. What happened was, with these students, they found themselves working in an industrial park, packing candy and moving boxes and doing some real physical work, many on the overnight shift. And now these are kids who had each paid from $3,000 to $6,000 to participate in this program. And even so, rent and other fees were being deducted from their paychecks. And when they tried to organize, this is United States of America, 2011, kids, organize? You mean like collective bargaining? You mean like union? Sorry. When they tried to organize, they were warned to stop their whining and bitching and complaining, or they would be kicked out of the program. If they're kicked out of the program, they have no legal, valid basis for being here. So they're immediately kicked out of the country. Huh? Well, they got a lesson about America, all right. They certainly did. Now, who's responsible for this mess? Hershey says it's not their problem because the plant where these kids were working is run by some other company. And the other company said, well, it's not our fault. We used a staffing agency to get the J-1 workers. And the State Department, they used a California nonprofit, an agency called the Council for Educational Travel, USA, to manage the program. And the head of that council, the CEO, said he's been trying to resolve the students' complaints, but that they're refusing to cooperate. Dirty ass, ungrateful students! Right? Now, that all appeared in an editorial in the Times, the other day. I'll give you the backstory as soon as we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Oh, the candy man can, 'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good. Oh, the candy man makes everything he makes satisfying and delicious. Talk about your childhood wishes.
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, so these students. There were four companies with a role in this huge Hershey plant in Pennsylvania where the Fordham students were employed. And each one of these companies, according to the New York Times, pointed to each other as being the primary manager in charge of monitoring the students' work. The students, now what happened was the students were dropped into the middle of a American workplace that only exists anymore the American workplace, as these foreign students are exposed to it, only exists in history textbooks. Things are entirely different now. You know, you don't come to America and join the union, get a good paying job, and you know the myth. These days, no, that doesn't work. In the first place, when you come to America, you don't get a good paying job. If you're in America, your chances of getting a good paying job are practically zilch. All right, but I digress. The students were dropped into the middle of a transform American workplace doing fast-paced production line and lifting work in round-the-clock shifts for wages of $7.25 to $8.35 an hour under multiple layers of contractors. The students said they rarely saw American employees in their area of the plant where they were packing Reese's, Kit Kats, and other candies. Now, they were being their job requirements were to lift these 50-pound boxes to do stacking and lifting work with no breaks. It was making their backs hurt. I'm not going to minimize this or maximize it. When you go to Home Depot, and you see all the employees are wearing these black expandable back braces, right? And not because their job requires constant lifting, but because they're doing lifting of any sort. These kids were required to do lifting for their entire shift. 7, 8, 10 hour shifts. And when they complained, they were told to shut up. One of the protesting students, who was 21 years old, an economics student from China, said he struggled to lift the boxes. In imperfect English, Mr. Peng said, "Very heavy, sometimes we can't do, but they say, faster, faster. If you can't, they say, go home." Oh, my God. Anyway, they walked out on, I think it was Tuesday, and then they walked out again yesterday. Another protest, this time in Hershey, PA. The factory is just outside Hershey, but they went to Hershey. About 150 of them, they held a rally in front of the Hershey Story Museum in the center of town. You know, the quaint little museum. Have you ever been there? It tells the story of Hershey chocolates. And, oh, it's just so, I mean, it just makes your heart bleed and your eyes tear up because it's such an American story right there in Pennsylvania Dutch heartland with the rolling hills and the neat little farms and it's a story of American entrepreneurship and how, you know, it started out this little chocolate company and then all of a sudden everybody on earth knows what a Hershey Kiss is. Okay, not everybody, but enough, right? So that's where they went to demonstrate. And why not? If you've never been there, it's just so sweet. And among this group of protesters, a bunch of Turkish students singing in their own language to passersby, and a lot of people driving through the town, and it's a working-class town, honked and waved. So about 400 students, mostly from universities in China, Turkey, and Eastern Europe, came to work at the packing plant under that summer cultural exchange program offered by the State Department called the J-1 program. And they worked for several months, like I said, and then they can travel around the country. Well, the Hershey company said it had contracted day-to-day operations at the plant to a company called Excel, a logistics company. And Hershey issued a statement that says, "We expect all of our vendors, including Excel, to treat employees fairly and equitably." Excel turned around and contracted with the local labor supplier, SHS Staffing Solutions, to provide temporary workers, including the J-1 students. SHS Staffing said its main function was to handle payroll and schedules for the students. So XL announced late yesterday that it had instructed the staffing company not to hire any more J-1 visa student workers for the packing plant after the end of the summer. And the chief executive of this council said every student assigned a job offer specifying what they would do before going back to work at the plant or before going to work at the plant. And the packing job offer stated frequent lifting of 24 kilogram boxes weighing more than 50 pounds. And Mr. Mr. Ayaya said the students had done the job in past years and did not regard the lifting as inappropriate for them. Blah, 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 blah. Faster, faster, kill pussycat, kill, you know. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. Now, there's a little bit more of this. Let me share it with you when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Now I am the backseat driver for America, and I am not at the wheel of control. And I am guilty, I am war, and I am the root of all evil. Lord, and I can't drive on the left side of the road.
Mortgage rates.
Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
All this fussing and fighting that you know I sure can't stay. Now, baby, I can leave the truck, you know we've got to leave today.
25 before the hour. So, anyway, the foreign students come here on a J-1 program. That's what the visa's designated as. Going to work here for a while. Learn about American culture. They get here. They go to work for Hershey Chocolate Company because the subcontractor to a subcontractor to a subcontractor put them there. The working conditions are appalling. The pay is lousy. The kids go out on strike. These are university students. They go out on strike. And now all hell is broken loose, right? However, they did get some sympathy from labor leaders. They did indeed. Dennis Bomberger, the president, the business manager at AFL-CIO local union that represents Hershey's chocolate workers, said they had no direct part in the protest because they do not represent the packing plant. That's somebody else or it's not unionized. But Bomberger noted that while that plant has grown, Hershey has reduced its full-time union employees by 700 in the past few years, down to a total of 1,500 unionized workers with 500 more layoffs expected this year. See a connection here? Of course you do. You know why you see a connection? Because you're not a teabagger. Because you still retain the ability to look at something, a little equation that says 2 minus 2 is 0. Good for you. Rick Bloomingdale, the president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, said he admired the students' risk-taking, especially since they were not in their own countries. Mr. Bloomingdale and two other labor leaders were arrested during the protest in front of the packing plant on Wednesday. Arrested. Well, of course. I mean, if you participate in a labor action against an exploiting corporation, what's going to happen? Will the exploiting corporation, will the capitalist pigs who run it be called outside to explain what they're doing? No. Are you crazy? But the people organizing or participating in the strike, in the case of these two American Union officials, who in sympathy sit their asses down on the ground, they will be arrested. For obvious reasons. I mean, you don't interfere with the free flow of capitalism in this country. I mean, even if it's they are documented, aren't they? They have their J-1s. But even if it's workers who come here on a student visa program to find out all the glories of the land of the free, of the home of the brave, they get a chance. That's what the brochures pay that these kids. Now, keep in mind, these kids are not coming here on somebody else's dime. It's their money. They raise the money. Anywhere from $3,000 to $7,000 to come over here and be exposed to the glories of representative government, the wonderful American people, and the powerful and positive and caring economic engine that is the United States. And what happens? This happens? Hey, kids. At a chocolate factory. Can you imagine what it's like at a factory where you cut chickens into pieces? Can you imagine what it's like at a factory where you remove the brains from slaughtered hogs and package it into little plastic wrappers? You were working in a chocolate factory. I bring up the pig brain things because recently Mother Jones had a lengthy expose about undocumented workers, not the fortunate J-1 workers, but, you know, just people who stumble across the border to find work. No good deed goes unpunished, right? I guess that's the way the capitalists will look at this. Oh, we try to bring these little crap heads over here. I mean, my God, look where we're getting them from. Romania? Kazakhstan? Try to bring them over here and show the American way of life, the little sons of bitches go out on strike. Welcome to the USA, students. And you may want to, something very important I would suggest to you. Take the message that you learned home with you. Take it home. Share it with your fellow Ghanaians or Kazakhstanians or wherever you are from, and let them know that the system in this country is as exploiting and in some manners even more so than in your home country. And you know why? It's very simple. It's very simple. To some of you students in your home country, there is no dream about peace, freedom, and the Kazakhstanian way, for example. I mean, you all are brought up usually in countries with non-functioning or dysfunctioning governments, economic systems that to a large degree are influenced by American capitalists or European capitalists, and you really don't have a chance. So the American myth, right? The American myth. Well, I'm going to get educated, and I'm going to go to America, or I'm going to go to America and get educated. Well, just take home the message you got from working at the Hershey Kisses plant in PA. Okay? It's a very important message. It will perhaps override the propaganda that you see from fascist organizations like the American or the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who soften you up. Look, the American way. Oh, by the way, we're opening up a jeans factory in your country. We're going to give all you little brown people, you people that speak funny languages, we're going to give you jobs. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. In dedication to Leah Burton's work in exposing the Christian Dominionists and their plan to take over America. On every level. It's called the Seven Mountain Mandate. Check it out at godsownparty.com. Man. Got a couple of emails here that I wanted to share with you. Oh, before we get to that, Rick Perry, he's laying it all out for the crazy people in this country so that they will, while rational people say, I'm not participating in this any longer, will stay home, and the crazy people will all rush to the polls to vote for someone who wants to bloody this country and destroy it and assist in helping Jesus return from Cloudville. Perry announced yesterday that the theory of evolution is nonsense. And he modified a bit. He said, well, it's got some gaps in it. Yeah, there's a gap that if you trace it forward would lead right to you, right, Rick? That's a big gap. Texas governor speaking at an event in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, was answering a little boy's questions about science when his mom urged him to question Rick Perry on evolution. Perry said to the boy, hey, I hear your mom was asking about evolution. I hear you want to see my gun. You know, that's a theory that's out there, but you know it's got some gaps in it. I can ride a horse, you know. I'm from Texas. Damn. What's your name, boy? You know, in Texas, he added, we teach both creationism and evolution in our public schools. We do. You know what creationism is, don't you, boy? You know, the Earth's only 6,000 years. All this horse crap about dinosaurs, millions of years. Don't believe that. Well, you know, we teach both because, you know, we figure you're smart enough to figure out which one is right. You're only 8 years old, but goddamn, we're going to, excuse me there, I didn't mean to take the Lord's name in vain. I meant to say, some bitch, you know, we'll provide you the learning materials here. On the one hand, here you have the Holy Bible, the Word of God, and it says right there in the beginning. I mean, the story's right there, boy, look, right there. Genesis 1:1, there it is. And over here you got this secular, demonic, liberal, Democrat, Barack Obama textbook over here, on the other hand, it talks about we came from little slimy things in the ocean. Goddamn, excuse me. Some bitch, boy, do you think we came from little slimy things in the ocean? That's right. I'm scaring the hell out of you, aren't you? All right, run on back to your mom over there. I don't care. Evolution. Yeah. Down in Texas, we teach the truth.
Who are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by.
Time before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Anonymous. And Anonymous message, the Burtons' work in exposing the Dominionists and their web overtaking America on all levels, called the Seven Mountain Mandate, should be checked out. And you can check it out at godsownparty.com. Godsownparty.com. Not Leah Burton's book, but the Seven Mountain Mandate. Scary stuff. Thanks, Anonymous. So, to wrap up the Rick Perry story here, you know, he's in New Hampshire. New Hampshire. I don't know what you'd think. But he's telling a little boy there that, you know, in Texas they teach both creationism, which is a made-up word, little boy. It doesn't mean anything. It comes out of the addled brains of people whose thinking patterns have been so totally disrupted with religious hokum that they make up words. Creationism. We teach both creationism and evolution down there in Texas, says the governor, and our little kids, they can figure out which one is right. Of course, you know, when you read a evolution textbook, they don't tell you, now, if you don't believe in dinosaurs, your very soul will burn in hell forever. However, in the other book, the one where we teach creationism, we make it very clear to you. You got in the argument with this book, Jesus is going to come down and smash your parents. And you're going to be an orphan forever. And demons will bite your ass until you grow up, at which point you'll be cast into hell. You figure which one you want to believe, little boy. And, of course, Perry is known, it says here, for his deeply Christian views. And he has been described as, quote, more explicitly religious than many people who have run for president or who have been president, end quote, which means he is more clinically, definably insane. Do you want someone like this with their finger on the button, so to speak, with the football following behind them, with the codes? To launch nuclear weapons against the godless infidels over in, oh, I don't know, pick a country. China? Iran? The little boy initially had asked Perry how old he thought the Earth was. That's how that conversation started. And Perry had responded, quote, you know what? You know what? I don't have any idea. I know it's pretty old. So it does go back a long, long ways. I'm not sure anybody actually knows completely and absolutely how old the Earth is. Half expected him to add, except God. God knows. You know, I'm getting to the point where I long for the bad old days of George W. Bush. No, 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 don't do that, Mike. No, 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 no. Oh, John Huntsman, the former, or I should say fellow Republican presidential contender, responded to Perry's comments yesterday via tweet. He tweeted, to be clear, I believe in evolution and trust scientists on global warming. Call me crazy. That's what John Huntsman wrote. Well, you know, Mr. Huntsman, I might be inclined to consider your nomination since you seem a little bit more liberal than Barack Obama, except for one thing. When you raised your hand at that circle jerk with the other seven of these vile, horrific Republican would-be nominees, remember you raised your hand when the Fox News guy said, if the ratio was 10-1, spending cuts to taxes, would you support it? And how many of you would say no? And you raised your hand, Mr. John Huntsman. So, you know, you can tell me you believe in evolution and global warming until your nose bleeds. But you also revealed at that point that you're a coward. Yeah, you did. Because you know damn good and well, John Huntsman, that a 10-1 ratio of cuts to tax revenue increases is, first of all, it's ludicrous to say no to that. It shows an inability to understand how deeply we are in trouble and what it's going to take to get us out, even though a 10-1 is ridiculous, more like 1-1, or $1 in tax revenue for every 10 cents. Just reverse it in cuts is the way it should be. So you revealed yourself, Mr. Huntsman, to be a clown and a coward. So go ahead, tweet anything you want, but your record's clear, buddy. Rick Perry in New Hampshire. Up there in New Hampshire, tell that little old boy. Yeah, we teach creationism down there in Texas, son. You know what creationism is? That's about snakes and things and, you know, floods and people dying and choking to death on their own bile and murder. Cain slaying Abel And you know, magic stuff, because after Cain killed his brother, he went to a place called Nod, Yeah, the land of Nod. And that's east of Eden. And you know what he did over there? He had sex with his wife. Where did she come from? Oh, hell, it doesn't make any difference. She might have been a monkey. You know, it doesn't matter. She might have been a dinosaur. She might have been a haint or a witch or something. But, boy, that's how we teach science down in Texas. You just remember that, son. Coming from a slimy little thing in the ocean. Turning into a monkey. Do I look like a monkey? Don't answer that, boy. Because I kind of sort of do, don't I? Look here. Watch this. Isn't that good? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Listen, I got to head for the mountains, y'all. I'll see you Monday. Monday. Yeah, Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit. My name's Rick Perry. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney. Wherever you are, boy. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.